With NFR Extra, we're going to take you behind the scenes in a way you've never heard before. Every 2 weeks, you're going to hear personal conversations with the icons and personalities that make up the world's richest and most prestigious rodeo. NFR Extra. All dirt, all rodeo, all year.
All right, Robbie, here we are. Obviously, it's some good music going on right next to the Bloomer Studio.
This thing's rocking, man.
Oh, yeah. We're right here at Cowboy Christmas. I mean,
people everywhere here. I can't believe the people. It seems like this year there's more people here than actually I've ever seen at this place.
It's pretty packed, but, you know, obviously, we're here. We got our trailer, thanks to Randy Bloomer and the team, next to the Rodeo Live stage
at
Cowboy Christmas.
Did a good job soundproofing it. You don't know how loud it'd be if that door comes open right there.
Yeah, I'm not even sure we'd be able to record this right now.
No, I just want you to know, I stood outside, but we forgot to take the sign off today, and I've been standing outside for like an hour because I thought y'all were recording in here. My bad.
Oh, man, all good. I am your host, Nevada Caldwell.
And I'm Rockin' Robbie Hodges.
And this is episode 27, and, man, we got a good friend of ours.
Kenny Pettit.
Yeah, Kenny, he's the Swiss Army knife of rodeo.
Absolutely, you know, and he's going to dive into, you know, from his, of course, the great contract act with Whiplash, but it's the other stuff where he was production down there and how he took care of me down, you know, my first NFR.
But even take it back further, I mean, like the hardwiring of how he figured out how to be in the rodeo business.
Yep, and, you know, his time with Neil Gay.
And the Mesquite Rodeo.
Yep.
I didn't even know.
And glad you learned something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you guys are going to learn a lot about these. And that's what we're trying to do here, you know, is bring it out with everybody and hear a different side, not the same old stuff that you hear in the two-minute interview. We sit down with these guys, and they pour their hearts out. I'm so surprised. I'm not really surprised. It's just I'm honored to take care enough to really pour into different aspects of what we're learning.
Well, and you get to connect the dots.
Yes.
And Kenny definitely, you know, from the behind-the-scenes folks that work with the rodeo business, you're going to be able to connect the dots to – the Sean Davis factor, the production of rodeo.
Absolutely.
Because Kenny's in the center of a lot of those things, and you're going to learn a lot about behind the scenes at the National Finals Rodeo with Kenny.
You bet. Take a listen.
This is Brylon Bentley with Rodeo News of the Week. Wednesday, December 11th in Las Vegas, you can find the Wrangler NFR autograph sessions at Gilly's in Treasure Island with the Bull Riders starting at 12. Bullfighters only Las Vegas Championship in Tropicana Outdoor Arena at 2 p.m. Silverton Casino presents Cowboys and Indians After Party. Josh Ward at the South Point Showroom at 8 p.m. Lainey Wilson at the Silverton Casino. Shania Twain. Zappos Theater at Atlantic Hollywood. Brett Rigby at Eastside Cannery. Kevin Fowler at Gilly's. Sundance Head at Hard Rock Hotel, Glenn Templeton and the Chansey Williams Band playing at the Mirage, 11 p.m. Wrangler NFR Go Around Buckle presentation hosted by Flint Rasmussen and Randy Corley at South Point Hotel and Casino. Now let's rewind to last night's rodeo.
It's halftime at the 2019 Wrangler National Finals Rodeo. Five rounds down, five rounds still to go. Let's talk about what happened in round number five. It was really an entertaining round.
Yeah, it was a huge round. And we saw the great horses out in this round. Some big scores in the 90s. That's what we expect.
Flirting with arena records. We start with bareback riding. And, of course, Clayton Bigelow actually owns the arena record. But he had Scarlet Bell. 92.5 points for him to get the win.
Yeah, and a big ride for Clayton Bigelow. He's trying to win his first world title. He took a huge step in that direction with this big ride.
On the steer wrestling side of things, Kyle Irwin's been a little bit quiet, but he's made a little bit of noise in round number five.
Yeah, Kyle Irwin, this is the second time now the steer has been out, so they knew he was a good one, and Kyle Irwin took advantage of it. Awesome run.
Team roping Chad Masters and Joseph Harrison, they have now won back-to-back rounds, winning time in round five, 4-2.
Chad Masters is so awesome on that end, and Harrison, he has been cleaning it up. Those guys now, two rounds, they've just been dominating.
Canada produces great saddle bronc riders. Here's one of them, Jake Watson on Lunatic from Hell, 92 points for the win.
Yeah, when you draw the former Bucking Horse of the Year, that's what you expect to do. Watson had a little trouble earlier, took advantage of it.
Ty Don Roping had trouble getting in the sevens, but man, Ty Harris woke him up, 7-4, go round winner.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this. Ty Harris, I watched him a lot this year, and I've seen him make runs like this. It's just a matter of time. He may make a few more.
And barrel racing, Donna K. Rule, she was the first to go, and that's like cheating.
Riding Valor, the AQHA Horse of the Year, and we knew that this was going to be her chance to be big, and it was really big, the fastest run we've seen this week.
And in bull riding, Daylon Swearingen, coming into round five, he was 0-4. He ends that streak. He gets a win, 92 points.
Great round of bull riding tonight. Swearingen, supposed to have been bucked off that first jump, and then just sits up and gives it to him.
Ram Top Gun, whoever wins the most money out of a single event wins a brand new Ram truck. Shane Hanchy where he's been impressive. 98 plus for him, tied with Emily Miller. And out of all of those right there, Emily Miller has the edge because of the average. A new Ram truck on the line. Hey, let's get busy. The March to Championship Saturday is now on. Round number six tonight, coming up at 10 Eastern, right here on CBS Sports Network.
Looking for tickets to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo? StubHub is the official secondary and fan-to-fan site of the rodeo. Fans can buy and sell their tickets through a safe and secure online marketplace. Visit nfrexperience.com.
Robbie, we're at halfway point right now.
Yeah,
my emotions can't take much more of this.
What about Joe? Well, that was an awesome interview.
I'm still breathing.
I am,
or
too.
Trying to.
And like I said, the only thing that's ever going to beat that would be something like a monkey riding a dog.
And all serious, right?
Yeah.
We're being serious.
Yeah.
No joke.
Hello, guy that has a monkey that rides a dog.
How are you?
How are you, Kenny?
I'm
it's good to see you.
It's good to see you, bro.
We got on the show, and Kenny did, man, pet it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. See, I sometimes badgered some names, but I'm not going to do this one. You're considered like the Swiss Army knife of rodeo business.
I've heard that, yeah.
He's diverse.
So, you worked for Hall of Fame stock contractor Neil Gay, clown and bullfighter at the Mesquite Championship Rodeo in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
What did that do to put you in this business? Or what? I mean, like, is that where this thing started from for you, or kind of where you started learning? Or
yeah, kind of. I had rode bareback horses in Bronx, and then I figured out the guy that got the paycheck just for getting there was the bullfighter. So I learned how to do that, and I met a girl, went to get married, and she wasn't going to get in that van that I was living in traveling around. So I had to find a place to live, I made a deal with Neil Gay to fight bulls for him for 1 year.
Nice.
And it was a place on his ranch, and there was, you know, I had to work during the week for him, and I made it for 1 year, and my wife and I left there 14 years later.
Oh, what?
And he told me, I mean, you know, I'd fire you, but I like your wife. I told him I'd quit, but I like yours.
Oh my God. Exactly.
But so, I did learn a lot from him and the Rafter G and the Gays and the you know, that Mesquite rodeo deal, and that set me up for all the things that I've done in rodeo since.
Yeah. When was that?
Oh, goodness. That was probably 20 years ago when I started.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're talking the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. 94, 5, 6, something like that.
So still, and I'm learning this as we go, right? Just mm-hmm. constantly learning on the fly. There wasn't a lot of resources, as I'm learning, for anything rodeo prior to probably the past 10 years, maybe 5 years. And when I mean resources, sure. I mean like these youth clinics, things teach you, they
right,
show
right.
you how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe, I haven't asked you this, Robbie. I mean, like, where do you start with, how do you learn how to be getting
well,
in the
well, dirt? I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Sean Davis, who is the general manager here.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, there's a transition going on now, but
yeah.
He is from Idaho, where I'm originally from. And I had gone to some of his bronc riding schools. He always held schools there in Twin Falls, Idaho,
and I've been
to some Bronco schools. And like I said, when I decided, you know, that bullfighter, I could probably do that. I'm athletic enough, and that guy gets a check just for showing up. I went to one of his schools, and that's kind of where that started.
Nice.
And then, like I said, there, I don't know, when I got to Mesquite, I'd fought some for some guys, and I got to meet Mesquite, and I thought I knew what I was doing. By God, I thought I was a bullfighter. And the first performance I ever worked was a man named Jimmy Anderson.
Yep.
And I don't know if you remember him. He was here a long time.
Oh,
he was PBR guy for a long time. I mean, one of the icons in our business. And the first night, as soon as the bull riding was over, that sun gun had me by my shoulder, and he was dragging me to the back. And we nearly fought because I didn't know how to fight bulls.
Right.
And I thought I did. And I was running all over. He's, you know, Hall of Famer. I'm running all over this Hall of Fame guy. And he straightened me out pretty quick back there. So
those guys would back
they
then.
They would. They would jerk the slack at you. So he did, and that has morphed into all the other things that I've done, you know, through pro rodeo.
Yeah,
so.
But you know the respect, though, and everybody that's in this business. MB, I know you, because, you know, you don't come from a rodeo background.
No, not at all, yeah.
All right, you used to be back in the 80s and 90s, okay?
Yep.
And Mesquite, just to give you a little bit on Mesquite, Mesquite was on TNN, the Nashville network.
Gotcha.
They'd show Friday night's performance
right.
1 week. Was it
no,
Sunday
they,
nights?
No, they would show Friday and Saturday. They'd combine them together for the best of.
Right.
And then once a month, they would have a best of. But
yes. And, and what they did, you weren't a country music singer if you didn't live in Nashville. And you weren't a rodeo guy unless you was on Mesquite. I don't care how many times you came to Vegas. I don't care anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But until Robbie Hodges rode at Mesquite one time and won the bareback riding there, I wasn't no cowboy.
If you ain't on Mesquite Championship Rodeo with that Donnie Gay,
you ain't nothing. Right. This was the
place,
very first that I can think of time that people saw rodeo on television and, you know, right. besides one and performance of Heston
right.
at the NFR.
And that really worked out for me, too, in that there was actually some, not, it was kind of organic, but there were some endorsement deals that I probably got that maybe other guys that were, be honest,
yep.
were better than I were. Guys that were coming to the finals, guys that were on the road all year, but nobody saw them. But they saw me every weekend at Mesquite Fighting Bulls. Mesquite
right.
every
awesome.
Weekend. And the respect and that, of it yeah. Is this. That was the, you know, when we used to, we were talking about Swamp Bramers and everything.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, I learned about
just,
that.
He learned about Swamp Bramers. Oh, well, geez. Guess where all of them went to Mesquite? If they didn't have to buck that good at Mesquite.
Do
they still
go
to Mesquite?
No, nope. Do what?
Do they still go to Mesquite?
Yeah. Mesquite's still going.
Mesquite's still going, but they don't have them.
It's not like it used to be.
They don't have them Brammers like now.
If you fought bulls at Mesquite Rodeo, it's like you fought bulls at Okeechobee.
Right.
But this side, it was as bad or worse because Neil didn't care that much how hard they bucked. They were going to run over something.
I like it.
And if you fought bulls there, it was a respect. It was a respect because, you know, like you said, Jimmy might be mad at you, but by God, you was fighting bulls at Mesquite. And that was the hottest. Everything he had, they come out of the sale barn, they were pissed.
Yeah.
Everything hooked there.
Well, you know, and
how'd you make it?
Yeah, well, yeah, how did I make it?
Yeah.
When I'd been there a while with Neil, and he'd put it on me to hire the other bullfighter. I'd fight one side, and Frank McIlvain was the barrel man there had been forever. And then he'd hire me to... Or he wanted me to hire the other guy. Just find you a guy every week, come with.
Yeah.
So, and I will tell you this, Neil didn't pay a lot. The checks were always good. There were other contractors that paid better and the checks weren't good. Neil's checks always cash, but the one thing.
You got your exercise.
That was way for CrossFit and a lot better.
Something chasing you. Right. CrossFit.
Yeah, that's
good
exactly.
Gosh.
But I remember going, you know, of course I worked there on the ranch, and I remember going to a sale barn and picking up 20 bulls. And I mean, it would take us 30 minutes to get them loaded in a trailer, and they were Bramers that hadn't seen people.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and from South Texas. And we'd take them back to the ranch, and we would tip them right there. You know, we'd run them. Well, they'd take them off the deal, let them get a drink. Then we'd tip them and then run them in the chutes, and he'd have a bunch of young kids getting on them. And they'd never seen people, you know, much less been in a chute. And, of course, with the tipping, sometimes it doesn't cauterize quite, so they're bleeding a little out of their horns. So they're slinging it, and them kids got in. Holy Hannah, was those summer days, they'd be hot as heck, and everything in that building is trying to hook you. Well, after a while, he told me, Neil said, he comes by me one March, and he says, hey, I need you to get in the barrel this year. I'm like, I do what?
Say who?
He says, come again. And he said, Frank's going to retire. And he said, I just for the first month, he said, you get in the barrel, you hire two guys, and then after that, I don't care what you do. If you hire me a barrel man or a bullfighter, or you do both, or it don't matter. Well, and I said, I hadn't heard Frank was going to retire. And he said, I hadn't told him yet.
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, but I mean, Frank was in his 70s and getting smoked in that barrel. So the first year.
If I'd have known you needed money that bad back then, Kenny, I'd have loaned
you. You're talking about a barrel man in 70s? Like,
he was in his mid late 60s.
Yeah.
Well, so And
probably underrated as anybody to take a hit.
Took ever smoke in there.
You go back and you watch the old Mesquite tapes and you're going to go, Hodges does that?
Yeah, I get in that barrel that first time, and I told him, you know, I guess I need a mic. He said, son, you don't need no mic. He said, that's the problem with these clowns nowadays. They all think they're stand-up comedians. And he said, he told me the two funniest clowns in the world, he said, as far as I'm concerned, was Tommy Lucia and Tom Feller. Now, Tom Feller now works for Justin, and Tommy Lucia's, of course,
just
gone.
Passed,
right? These guys weren't Rumford. They weren't Robbie. They weren't the they were kind of hard old men, but when they got to the arena without a mic, they could entertain, you know. Nice. And his theory was that you're gonna, and the thing about it, that you're just gonna hurt yourself trying to be a stand-up comedian. Learn to fall off the barrel, learn your pratfalls, learn all that stuff first. So for the first year and a half, I didn't have a mic, which was fine, because lots of times at Mesquite in those days, the tourists would come, the whole north side of the arena wouldn't speak English.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that would be the tour buses would come in and it'd be people from France or from Italy or wherever.
Really?
And you had to do that pratfall stuff. You had to fall down. And the first night I was ever there in the barrel, I just barely knew anything about a barrel. And I got smoked in the first bull in the second section. I got smoked, and that thing went end over end, and we went in the calf rope and shoot. I mean, he flipped me over the gate into the calf rope and chute.
Whoa.
And I come out, stumbled around, fell down. The crowd laughed. My wife says afterwards, she says, well, that was kind of funny. You know what you did that you'd have. That yes. I wasn't acting. That son of a gun lit me up.
And that wasn't planned.
Right. And the first, you know, the first year I was with Neil, he ruined a barrel.
Boy.
Just
crushed it.
The bulls had whacked it so much. They had been hit so many times and so hard, it had compromised the aluminum. Oh, and I had it. God. So about for the next, you know, however many years I fought for him, about every 3 years I'd have to buy a barrel. And it was just because I was getting smacked. Like, I can remember 10 bulls out. 9 of them hitting the barrel, what? You know, and just being give out. But
it made you.
The thing about Neil,
I pride myself on working the barrel. That's what I think it's such a disservice now. Some of the clowns that don't work the barrel, and it's a kind of a kick in the old sack to those guys that don't because of you and the Franks and
yeah.
And I saw Frank at the old Wrangler bullfight reunion the other day. Yep. And Frank Jr. and them guys, they're beat to hell. And I thought I worked a barrel being in Okeechobee. And everything there weighed 2,200. They didn't have to buck that good.
No, they could just freight train you.
And the bulls would get famous, not by bucking, but just, and Donnie used to, better watch this one right here. Kenny, look out, you know. And
yeah. That was good.
So you survived. See, yeah. So you have an honor right there. I mean, you got a badge.
Yeah.
Because just surviving.
Well, the thing was, there was a ton of times. I'll be completely honest. I mean, if you didn't know Neil, I love him like he's my own father.
Sure you do.
But, boy, he didn't stand no messing around in his rodeo, you know, and that sort of thing.
He'd take you to the flank. Was it the flank room?
The flank room. Yeah, you'd have to go fight in the flank room. But
nice.
There were times where I wanted out. I'll be completely honest. I'm like, I can't do the second section. I'll be honest. I'm, you know, Evil Roy's out tonight. Captain Jack Sparrow's out tonight. Tuco's out tonight. They're all going to hurt. But I knew that the whooping I was going to get from the bulls was going to be a lot less than what I was going to get from Neil if I didn't show up and get
that flank room. Hey, let me tell you something. If America right now had a flank room.
Flank room, yeah. Yeah.
Let me tell you, they used to go back there, and that's where everything, nothing got handled out on TV, right?
No, he never.
If it was a trip to the flank room.
Oh, you were going to
get that. Well, and I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this one time. It was in the middle of summer. We were gathering bulls at the ranch, and one of my favorite Neil Gay stories.
Right.
We was gathering bulls at the ranch, and whenever bull wouldn't go, you know, off the deal.
Yeah.
They'd end up roping him. Well, there was a lot of hollering and yelling. Well, you'd have to get a trailer and you have to get drag him in the trailer and all that. And there was a lot of discussion, mostly over how that was going to happen, right? Well, I was the bullfighter, so my job was to get off my horse and, you know, do what I could to help that bull get in there and not die.
Yeah.
Well, at one point, Neil is screaming at me, close the rocking gate. And Jim, his son, screaming at me, open the...
Yeah.
They're both just screaming at me. And I take the hot shot, and I just chunk it at both of them. And they duck, and it goes over their head. And I'm like, you too, sorry. I'm screaming. I'm cussing. You too, sorry, SOBs. You go back to your bleeping house. You go figure out a plan. You come here back here, and you tell me what it is. You know, and I'm just furious. And then once I got it all out of my mouth, I got on my horse, and I rode away.
You done had
it.
And
I rode about 10 steps and went... Well, that was the dumbest thing I've done in the last 10 days. Because we lived there. I mean, my wife and I had a house.
You know what you didn't do, Kenny? What Joe said. What didn't he do?
Oh, count backwards. No, I didn't, that's what I didn't do. I didn't come back.
Sometimes with them with that whole bunch, you had to count backwards from 170.
Yeah, 70, right. Yeah. Well, so I had to ride. So I rode back to my house. I didn't even go to the barn. Rode back to my house, tied the horse up, took his saddle off, just left him in my house, and went in the house. My wife was home for lunch, and she says, what are you doing home? And I said, yeah, we're going to have to pack because I just think I just peed in the Cheerios right there. Yes. And here in about 30 minutes, here comes Jimmy. He honks the horn. He says, Dad wants to talk to you. Yeah, but he does. So I get in the truck and I drive the longest.
Coach wants to talk to you. Bring your playbook.
Right, yeah. I drive the longest ever to go there. And he's got a big porch. And so he's sitting on that porch with a glass of tea. And I sit down and there's a glass of tea for me. And we just sit there, and I don't know if we sat there for 5 minutes or 5 hours. It felt more like 5 hours, and finally Neil says, it's hot out. I said, yes, sir, it is. He said, you know, when it's hot, people lose their tempers. I said, yes, sir. He says, Yeah, try not to let that happen again. And
then, but I'm not saying that what was, I caused
that. That was, and I see Neil lose his temper all the time, you know, but that was, it was that he knew that wasn't something to push on, you know, that Absolutely, wasn't something yeah, to, that wasn't the line in the sand. Yep. That was just a guy getting mad.
Yeah.
You know, now if he'd have drawn a line in the sand, I stepped over it. Well, then that'd been one thing.
Yep.
So all them years with him, I learned a ton of things. I learned about rodeo and I learned about how to conduct myself and how to be a professional. And for instance, I had a deal one time. We're going 100 different directions. I have some stuffed photo bulls. Fact is, I've got one here. The one that's in front of the days of 47.
Oh, really?
There is mine.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've got these stuffed photo bulls that we've hauled around, and I did a bunch of work for Frito-Lay when they were big sponsors with rodeo. A guy came to meet Mesquite, and he said, can you haul this bull anywhere? I said, yes, sir. He said, would you take it to all the Walmarts around Houston during the Houston rodeo, livestock show? He said, would you take, and pictures will be free. And it was Polaroids that tells you how long it goes.
He said,
the pictures will be free, but it'd be Frito-Lay branded for an hour each or 2 hours, I guess, at each Walmart in Houston. So, yeah, he said, what would that cost? So I gave him a price. Well, that was for Houston's, what, 4 weekends long?
Yeah.
So the first weekend, me and my wife went and did the deal. We came back, and I was loading this bull on a two-horse trailer, just what I had, you know, when getting around. And Monday morning, when you worked for him, you went to the porch. Monday morning, everybody went to the porch. You figured out what you were going to do that week. That's how that worked.
Right.
And he says, so how'd that deal go? I said, I bid it wrong. I said, I didn't make any money this weekend. I said, I'm going to call that guy to rebid it. And Neil liked to jerk me off my feet. He said, son, you're going to do what you said you were going to do. You're going to do it for the price you said you were going to do it. And if you go broke, I'll back you. You understand?
Nice.
Yes, sir. So every week he'd ask me, you need money? We just got along. No, we're, and I was younger then, didn't have much. And no, we're okay. Well, once that was over, Frito-Lay hired me for a 5-year contract that really kind of set me up my ranch and stuff.
Right on.
And always a couple years later, one of the Frito-Lay guys, we were at a bar and he'd had too much and he was one of the early guys. And he said, hey, you know, we did that deal at Houston that first couple years. He said, you lost your butt, didn't you? And I said, yeah, kind of. And he said, yeah, I was watching that, see if you were going to do what you said you were going to do. And he said, that's why we hired you for the rest of them. So, I mean, all that came from Neil. Wow. You know, yeah. So, anyway.
So, all right, hold on. I'm this now, okay.
What a pioneer, yeah.
Well, and I know how I met Kenny.
Right.
It's through Sean Davis.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a pattern here that I'm seeing with Kenny that I didn't know Kenny prior to that.
Yeah.
You seem to stick to some pretty good dudes that have this hard wiring to how to be.
Yeah. To understand how those guys are, you know. Like I said, my wife is an outstanding person. And I mean, one's a women's ministry church. She's all, you know, she's up for sainthood.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The only time I've ever seen Neil really mad at me is he asked me, you know, this has been like a year ago. He said, so how's Coley? He calls her Coley. Loves her. Mm-hmm. So how's Coley? I said, oh, she'll do till I trade her in for the next one. I got a 10-minute, he calls it making you a speech. I got a 10-minute speech about how that is. And then I tell you another real quick funny story. This spring, I always call Neil on Father's Day. Now I have my own father, whatever, I always call Neil on Father's Day, and I always call KG, his wife, on Mother's Day. I mean, we were there a long time. And so Mother's Day, I'm with the monkey, and we're rodeoing, and I'm stopped at a rest area to spend the night. You know, got the push out on the trailer out and everything. And so I standing outside, and I call K. Well, Neil answers the phone, and he don't hear as good as he used to, right?
Right.
And he's in, what, he's in 93 now, I guess, and it still rides.
Wow.
Still gathers bull at 93,
Love it.
And so I'm talking to him for about 5 minutes, maybe 10, and I'm yelling because he can't hear me. Well, then KG gets on the phone. I talk to her for about 10 minutes. When I get done, I see that I'm in Louisiana at a rest area, which I'm telling about the rest areas in Louisiana.
Oh, man.
You got to be on your toes there. Yeah. And here comes this guy from around the front of a semi-truck.
It's open carry.
Right, and he's almost jogging, and I have a gun, and I'm reaching in my back pocket to get that gun back out, and the guy comes, hey, he said, look, listen, he said, can I pray for you? I'm like, what, come again? He said, no, look, I just want to pray for you. And you meet all kinds of weirdos on the road, right? I'm like, yeah. He said, no, listen, I heard you talking to your family, and he said, I know we're out here on the road, and he said, you know, it's hard when you're away from your family. I heard you yelling at him. I just want to pray for you for peace. And I'm like, pray for... Oh, no, and I'd rather explain the whole deal. I'm like, No, that's my granddad. He's hard of hearing. I'm just yelling so he could hear. But that guy thought I was yelling at my family because it was, you know. But that was interesting. You know that.
Yeah. So I want to let's go to NFR real quick.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
So, or actually, the connection to all this is that when you were going to that school with Sean, is that when you started your relationship with Sean?
Yeah, kind of there. And then I mean, he, of course, a lot of kids went to his schools, and I rode bareback horses in Bronx. So I went to both them schools. And then when I started fighting bulls, I went to his bullfighting school. So I knew who he was. I'm not going to say he knew who I was. Totally. I mean, he may have vaguely remembered. I just remember being at one of his bronc riding schools. And I was young and broke. I got on out on every horse. They kept running horses under me. I just kept getting on. And towards, I wouldn't do myself any good. I was too tired.
Right.
I was getting one jumped everything. Mm. And he finally come over. I had cardboard stuffed in my pants because the inside of my thighs
so bad.
Were so bruised up from the swells of the saddle.
Jeez.
And anyway, he made me stop. So maybe if he vaguely knew who I was, it was the guy that wouldn't quit, maybe. But I was actually out here for the convention, which is they have that here at the beginning where you find your rodeos. And
oh, yeah, Robbie, were there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So I was out at the convention.
I had the coolest booth because,
The guy that was doing the TV production for the NFR then also did the TV production for Mesquite. And he called me one day and he said, hey, are you out here? I'm like, yeah, I'm at the convention fixing to go home. And he said, is your stuff out here? I said, what stuff? He said, your clown stuff. I'm like, you know, I think they got that job hired. I think I saw it in the sports news. He said, no. He said, Sean wants somebody to dance in the crowd with clown makeup on and shoot t-shirts during pre-event. And he said, the clowns that are here, the guy, bullfighters and the clown, they're just too cool. They don't want any part of it. And he said, so, you know, would you be interested? I said, you mean wear my baggies and makeup in front of the yellow shoots? Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably work that in. I might be able to.
Yeah, right.
I might find a spot for that in my life. So, yeah, so we came and did that. And that morphed into me working in the production of the NFR since then. That was 15 years ago. And the first couple of years, I did it that way. Then I went to doing some other things, and now it's just kind of morphed into a million other things that I do there.
Well, that's how I met you.
Right, yeah.
So that's how I met him, Robbie. I mean, like, behind the scenes. Oh, you know, right.
I've been waiting since I found out he was here. I've got to tell you this story, okay? And so just dumb hillbilly from Georgia gets the NFR, okay? It's 2010. I'd never done anything in my life except just, you know, some rodeos, and I'd worked a barrel, so the bull riders decided, hey, we need this guy to keep us. So I get there the first day. Well, all I have heard is how scary Buck is, or Sean Davis, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I believe him. So I go in there to that office the first day, and you know, we have this meeting and everything, and I am looking for somebody that just might even consider thinking about even giving me eye contact, okay? No. Because I am nobody, okay? And I said, just somebody that looks like a friendly face, okay? And I'd known Kenny just from the Mesquite day and just, you know, around. I didn't know him that well. I gained one of the best friends in the world. He was like, it's just somebody to cling to because he was in this. And when I saw Kenny and I looked at Kenny 15 minutes after sitting out that hall waiting to meet with Sean for the first time, you know, that first scary meeting, it looks like you're in the principal's office.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we went over that on my old interview. If you go back to my podcast, when y'all interviewed me, and when he rolls that blind back and he's scary looking over them glasses, Kenny was the most friendly face I'd ever seen. Yeah. And I said, Kenny, you're my new friend. Do anything you need to do to me to keep me from screwing this up. And he was like the warmest blanket. It was the, and we, after that, and I tell them that every time. And he hadn't done the finals yet, had you? I mean, you.
No, not then, I hadn't.
You know, and he didn't. He kept me, you need here. He would point out my guys to point at, you know, and he is the best at building confidence because there is.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. If you walk in that room and you think that you know what the hell's going on, you are 0-180 wrong, buddy, because let me tell you. Anything you've done, and the first thing everybody said when Robbie gets, well, he's going to Hodges, he's going to show him how it's done. He's going to pop out as a genie. He's just going to do what he wants. I said, y'all going to be real disappointed in me. Kenny took me under his wing, and he kept me. And you might want to tell him what Buck, you know, the story. After we met and got to be okay, me and Buck, you know, when we talk, I say Buck, Sean, but Kenny kept me and that is a now it is an unbreakable friendship that we have, because every time that I think of Kenny, that's the first thing, he was there and took care of me there.
Well, that's a solid room in there. Yeah, and that's not a room that just I've been there, and you know, obviously I'm not a rodeo dude, so I'm always trying to figure out who's who and what's what, but I'm always paying attention to the guy with the gavel over in the corner.
Right,
that,
you know,
that's and I got my cell phone turned off.
I took those the battery things, I mean, out of my cell phone back when you could, just to make damn sure it didn't go off, because 100%. I see that.
And for the people that don't know, if your phone goes off during the deal, there's a fine.
Yes.
And it's either $1,000 or a bottle of whiskey. And
yes.
And I think, you know, what they do, you know, you're like, whiskey, well, Sean's LDS, he didn't even drink. But what happens is every night, the NFRC, the National Finals Rodeo Committee, after the rodeo, they go down and have a meeting down there. And they sit around and talk about how good the rodeo went, and they got to have some libations. So that was just Sean's way of his office not having to buy the libations.
Brilliant. Oh yeah,
let's just make it a fine. So because you're gonna get five.
He's
phones.
Guaranteeing that a human's gonna mess up in that room.
And now it's a running joke. Like Harris is there now, and I'm calling John because I know what time the meetings are. Right, and now, but you don't know that when you walk in that sucker.
No. That's an intimidating place to begin with. And what they don't realize, there is so many parts of the NFR. And I mean, well, you know this, that there is a plan for everything from a hangnail to a nuclear war.
100%.
There is a plan. There has been a meeting about that plan. That plan has been practiced.
Yes.
The people that are part of that are expected to be there in full and on time. And that's one of the reasons that this rodeo runs so smoothly is that, you know, and I'm gonna tell you a quick story about Sean. What I learned from there was 3 years there that I guess they called me the rodeo production manager. That didn't mean anything.
Right.
I just mean I was Sean's gopher. I mean, I just spent all day, and with him and even Boyd now, meetings start at 6. I mean, that's when the day starts at 6.
Yeah.
It's over around 11.
Yep.
And there's not really a lot of downtime that whole time.
No.
And that started a week before the rodeo started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and actually that week before the rodeo started in the office is way busier.
Yeah.
You know, once the rodeo gets started, you're like, okay, unless something goes wrong. But that week before is really, well, they had a guy that had Bull of the Year 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And he had there are a lot of rules in the back, and they, you know, about where you can go with this credential or that credential.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But, and they're always like, well, how come, you know, that you'll get a lot of guys gripe and complain. And I'm going to tell you why that is on that whole deal. There was a stock contractor had Bull of the Year. His flank guy, who's actually a friend of mine, flanked the bull, and then he wanted to watch. Well, you can't go up on the chutes and watch, but he just stepped up. This flank guy just stepped. All he did is take two steps up, watch the bull ride, and step back down. And the guy who's the gate guard right there took his credentials.
Oh, man.
Well, this guy come in to the office after the rodeo, this committee guy or this contractor, and he was furious about him.
Yep.
He only got up on two steps. So anyway, while he was waiting to see Sean, I come in and said, you know, such and such, and Sean says, go find that rule and highlight it. He said, and bring it to me on the, because we have a list of the ground rules.
Yeah.
So I did, brought it to him. Sean sat in there in his office, and that, you know, it's open roof. You can hear, you know, if you're in the office, and it was just us. And this guy rants and raves and hollers and yells, and Sean just lets him do all of it. And then when it's over, Sean said, you know what? He said, you might have a point. He said, but I need you to go get, and he names five contractors. He named two calf ropers, and he said, and we need John Barnes, and he just named three or four of the people, and the two.
Yeah.
And the guy said, what the hell? He said, well, those guys missed their horses out, and those two guys missed the calf roping. He said, you want us to break a rule for you, I'm going to have to break the rules for them. So if you're willing to go get all them guys and we can rebuck them tonight so that we all had a chance, he said, well then. And the guy left, and he left mad, but he still left.
Yeah.
And the thing that I learned from him there is that everybody, and he never said this, but this is something I learned, everybody in that building is a wolf at home.
Yeah.
Every contractor is the biggest thing at his rodeo or his hometown. True. Everybody there is the best at what they do.
Yep.
So if you start letting this rule or this rule or this rule or this rule slip, well, then you did it for him. Why can't you do it for
yes.
me? Yep. So everybody in that particular job, and it's my opinion, Sean or Boyd or whoever, everybody in the building needs to like you a little and dislike you a little. Nobody yeah. needs to love you because at your, yeah. you know, you have a thing. The production by itself is more important than each moving part.
100%.
So, yeah. And that's sometimes you don't, and I understand that a little bit from the contestants, you know, especially a young guy that's here his first time. Man, I finally made the finals and you're worried about me riding in the grand entry? Yeah, we are. Because we're worried about everybody riding against. It's not just you.
Yep. That Hodges, Trevor, he's going to show them how it's done.
I will be honest with you and say there was a large number of pre-event conversations over all the things that may or may not happen when Robbie Hodges got out there.
Oh, I'm sure. Knowing that room, yeah,
and fact is, Robbie, like Sam, his friend and all, I was pretty much assigned to him. Sean said, this is great. Go find Robbie. And he says,
Hillbilly.
Just go with him. Just make sure he's in the right spot at the right time. And not for nothing. I mean, who doesn't need that? I mean, I
was blessed to have him.
Yeah.
Right. See? I mean, who doesn't want, when you're doing something for the first time, you just don't want to stub your toe or make a mistake or that
sort of
thing.
So. We're talking about Kenny here, and I'm going to come back to NFR.
Sure.
Contract Act twice, the NFR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about Chuck Wagon, which I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Whiplash.
Whiplash, yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk about how important that was. Just this, we clearly know you have a relationship with Sean on these things. But how was it, man, getting out of that dirt?
Okay,
let's go with the Chuck Wagon first.
I'm going to tell you now. Yeah. I will never forget that. I mean, there was practice the night before, and that was one thing.
Rehearsal?
Yeah, rehearsal.
You've
been to rehearsals, right?
Quite a few.
Yeah, for people that don't know, every single opening that you watch at the NFR, we did the night before.
Yeah, it was a
practice after
the
rodeo was over.
Oh, we don't just do it once.
No, and we might have done it 10. It depends on how big the wrecks were. I mean, all that, you just think that little old 20-minute vignette happens. Does it not happen. There is
that goes back to that midnight thing.
Oh, we're doing it again.
Yeah. Oh, son of a
man, we're not getting out of here.
Right, yeah.
It's my daughter.
Oh. Yeah. So that's a really interesting deal that those openings don't happen. They are practiced. So but anyway, I remember sitting up there because I was after the I guess I was before the grand entry. And the way they opened the whole rodeo, you know, there's Canada night. There's three things we love about Canada. I can't remember what he said. poutine, the Wild West, and chuck wagon racing. And that was the cue. And to roll down that arena, it's downhill into that arena. And that cool air hits you in the face, and that fog's on the ground. And I made 2.5 laps pretty easy and then went out. With the crowd on their feet.
Yeah.
And I will tell you now, I have that on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
How long ago was it? I have it on DVD. There are times when I'm having a bad day that I'll just go plug that in. Because I can just remember, I can remember that feeling. I can remember, I didn't sleep that night.
Yeah.
You know, the night before I slept, you wouldn't think so because I'd be nervous, but I drove wagons a lot. I can drive wagons, you know, through a bathroom door. That night, I was so amped up and so wound up and so excited that I just didn't sleep.
I got a question though. Think about this. So, what was more important, not disappointing the fans or Sean?
On that,
yeah.
Was there fans?
Yeah.
I know where his perch is, and that's obviously you don't look there, but afterwards, that next morning when you have that, you've been those 8 o'clock meetings.
Yeah.
There's the 8 o'clock meeting every morning for us. It's part of the production. He has his Big Chief tablet.
Yes, indeed.
that he's flipped open, and you just want to be on that first page and not on the second one.
Yes. Yeah, you don't want to be.
And not for nothing. I mean, I've seen Sean mad at these things, and boy, I think Boyd would be the same way. I've seen him mad, but I've never seen him lose his temper, because it's not about, you did this or you did that. It's about, let's get this production perfect, because you cannot imagine the eyes that are on that.
Yeah.
Even for instance, real quick story, Tomas Garcia Alonso. You know him? Tomas is a trick roper here. Mm-hmm. He's been active the year. He was active there last year. Tomas, he is a vaquero. You don't even know. I've done some Latino things with him with Whiplash. And in that culture, as a vaquero, he's a god. I mean, He'll sign that. Autographs for 2 hours after them deals because they just want to meet him, want to see him, want to shake hands
with
him.
Oh, the Pepe deals?
Yeah, those Pepe deals.
Yeah.
On
there. Yeah.
So the thing about Tomas is he comes to my house, or he has the past. They live seamlessly. And he comes to my house, and he takes the horses he's going to bring here, and he puts them on the side of my barn where I don't have any horses. And he swaps their whole feeding program, time that he feeds them.
Nice.
Like midnight and noon. Oh. Like the whole day gets turned around. And then what he does is he comes over and just works his horse at my house and feeds them that way.
Mm.
And the reason for that, he told me, when my horses get to the arena as a flag, you know, the ones that their manes and tails, those are his horses.
Beautiful.
He says, when I get there, they can't poop. Because he said the whole world will see that. So what he has them on his feeding program where they hit the arena, they are empty. There's nothing in them.
Oh. Nice.
Like, and so that's, but to be a showman and to be production-minded, and that's what I'm talking about. We're talking about production.
Yeah.
Production-minded, who thinks of that? I mean, Tomas thinks of that. I mean, let's change their feeding program. So the minute they're done with the rodeo, now they get to go eat. They're empty. Now they're going to be hungry.
Well, now we just figured out why he's been here 16 times.
I mean,
exactly. But that's one less thing for Sean or Boyd to have to worry about, though. All those guys want down there is not to have to worry about you.
Right.
That is this whole conversation that we've had today is they don't have time to screw with you.
Well, there's so many. You're organizing so many train wrecks that the ones that you can avoid, let's avoid them to begin with. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, that in production rodeo, people don't understand a lot of times that they just don't organically happen. And this one especially. I mean, some of the bigger ones, Houston, Fort Worth, San Antonio, they have production value to them.
Yep.
Right.
But none of them have
27 times more.
Because like this last weekend was all the rodeo committees were here.
Yep.
Well, it's really important to really hit your marks on committee weekend. Mostly because they're tired. They've been here a week.
Yeah. Yes.
They've had every bullfighter buy them a drink so they could, try to get a job or get the rodeo. So when they get the rodeo, honestly, they're tired.
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit production-wise to pick them up.
Yeah.
You know, to make them have a good time because they're just, they haven't had 15 drinks all year and they had that yesterday. So they're a little out of the game, right. So.
With that said, with the new changing of the guard with Boyd being here now, instead, do you really, because you see it as good as anybody because of your position there, Kenny, do you see the production changing a whole lot in the next, say, 2 years, or is it going to be, because I like the production of what it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We're here instead of what we usually do at capacity where we're entertaining and this is all about those top 15 guys.
Right, sure.
Whatever it takes.
Right.
Do you feel like that it's going to change a little bit with Boyd or maybe more, you're going to have more of a presence of us being there more? Or do you think it's going to be because of the time restraint?
Us meaning?
Like contract people being in it more? Do you see changes coming?
Well, from a production standpoint, obviously Boyd's going to do what Boyd's going to do. I mean, and has the talent to do that, knows what he wants. I think that any changes that he makes, and he told us that last year, because last year he shadowed Sean and he made a speech there at the end about how he has the best people. He has the best people at what they do doing it, the best that he knows of. And so there wasn't going to be a bunch of wholesale changes there. And there might be some subtle changes here and there. As far as act deals, it'll be interesting to see that because they, honestly, there's not a place to put them. What people don't realize about the NFR is that it is timed in 15-second increments. Like there is a timesheet that you see every morning that you get every day that is 15-second. What happened last night at 15-second increments.
Right, so, and there's more stopwatches out there than at the timed event.
Right, yeah. Then
red phone.
Right, yeah, that fan the phone. But see, the point is that I don't know that they're – I'm sure they will put what they can where they can, but to be honest, and I'm a contract actor.
Yeah.
I would love to be out there every performance.
Yep.
But the NFR really is about the contestants. It is – I know that sounds, I probably get thrown out of the contract act meeting next year, but that's
from the guys who's never been there. Right. The guys that's never seen.
And there are some places for that, like, you know, like the Whiplash deal. He just made a lap. It wasn't the act.
Yeah.
It wasn't the sheep and the hot rod that brings the sheep in and the whole nine yards.
Yep.
It was, and the thing, I raced chuck wagons. We would do whole races. I came in, made a lap and a half and left. That was, that's the only place they had for me to do that thing. So I was willing to, it was kind of like the putting the clown makeup on, dancing the crowd, shooting t-shirts.
I remember.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, yes. Whatever you want, I'm
it
for
was,
that.
It was the same way because everybody, Benji and all them were like, you got to go do the genie pop out for it. Right. You remember when we did it that night?
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
We did a full production of what we were going to do the next day. And I used to do this thing where I'd pop out. I got it off of Ferris Bueller's Day Off when he dun, 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 dun. And I'm dressed like a genie.
Well, you're talking about like Aladdin.
And I popped out of the barrel with the powder and everything, and Buck's up there just laughing, and he said, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. We don't have time to do it at the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo. I said, okay, fine. You know, I mean, and I didn't even want to do it because I knew we're
It ain't going to happen.
You have 20 minutes to run that bull riding off, okay? Yeah. Maximum. And here's the problem with the bull riding is that's the last event, okay? So all the time that Bronc 4 wasted, you're having to eat it in the bull ride to keep that 2 minutes. So, you know, I was like, hey, Sean, let's just run through this thing. Let me work the barrel 10 first and get out.
Well, what's,
you know?
What's changed a little bit is back in the days when we were live on ESPN,
Yes.
You had to fill space with something.
That was tricky.
Yeah, and it was tricky because, and I'll be completely honest, if you hire the girls here in Vegas that do the rings or you hire these people here have, if you tell them I need 2 minutes and 30 seconds, at 2 minutes and 29, they'll cut off.
Absolutely.
They have a clock. And to be completely honest, most rodeo acts, guys, and I'm me included, don't have that same clock in their head.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, for instance, at the rodeo, Whiplash, the act is maybe it's 8 minutes, give or take.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The give or take's the point. You know, sometimes it might be six if everything goes pretty quick. Sometimes it might be a little bit longer if the sheep aren't loading or the dog's not working right. Whatever. Here, we didn't have that luxury.
Right, and we didn't have a front man spinning his hand at us to say wrap it up or stretch it.
So, you know, anytime they do anytime they do anything like that, you now that they don't, you know, that we're on somewhat of a delay, they're just trying to get through the rodeo.
Absolutely.
And that's not trying to get, they're going to get through the rodeo. We're going to have this rodeo. It's going to be outstanding. They've done a lot of extra stuff this year. I don't know if you've seen the video mapping. Yeah. The video mapping's new, which, you know, if people don't know what that is, it's just video on the ground. But that the you can't believe the amount of meetings and the amount of work and the amount of everything it took
just to
put pictures on the ground for about a minute and a half a night.
Everything's like that.
Right. You can't imagine how long it took to hang the pyro truss for just the rockets red glare. Bow, 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 bow.
Yeah.
How much time in a day that takes just to make that one effect. And then you add all the other things that are happening at the rodeo. That's the reason that stuff's planned down. You know, to the
absolutely.
To the 50
so is that why y'all all have Thanksgiving at Rob Hart's house?
Because you're out here.
If you want to not do Thanksgiving, if you don't like your family, join the NFR join the crew NFR, because they're out here. Well, they start dang near middle of November.
Yeah, the guys out with the Buckinger, the chutes, and building pens and stuff out there. Right. You know, they start building that stuff pretty early.
Yes,
and those guys are out here a lot.
And that building is ours for a month. Let me ask you this: where do the Rebels play? Do they, or are they just away?
They hit the road.
Do they really? Here's
a couple things that happened. So in the past, the Rebels, when Tark was here, they would go on the road and then that kind of transferred through. But of late, you know, because we got the facilities here now, they play at like the Orleans Arena. They'll have these like, it's not necessarily like a conference game, but like a tournament or something like that.
Sure.
So a lot of times they played in things like T-Mobile.
Okay.
So yeah, it's kind of played out that way.
I always wondered that because somebody asked me the other day, he says, so that means that Rebs are gone for a month and a half. I mean,
they had the other day. That was again production.
The Lady Rebel game.
Yeah, there's a room, this great big room that is the media room, and there's a whole setup for the media room, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they had a Lady Rebel game in that room
Last Tuesday,
yeah,
Robbie.
Yeah, Tuesday. So overnight, Tuesday. They had what? To...
Today's, you know, Monday. That was less than a week ago.
They had to strip that whole deal and then put all, run all the cable and everything it takes for all the...
Yep.
And they did that overnight.
Good.
And that's the stuff, you know, when...
We call it Cowboy Corral and also down below.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, they had to do the whole thing. So, wow. You know, when you're out partying, you know, wahooing it up and playing blackjack, there's a bunch of people...
Getting
at that building
always
to make sure that tomorrow night when you show up, you are going to see the most entertaining rodeo in the entire world.
Yeah,
and right. And by hook or by crook, it's going to be that way. You know, they're going to make sure, and as it moves into the Boyd era, yep. I'm sure he is going to make sure there won't be a stumble, there won't be a hiccup. They're like, I'm going to tell you, people are more, they're always on point.
Oh, yeah.
But for lack of a better term, the regime change, it's more important to be on point, not because you want to do a better job for one guy than you did for the other, but because it's important to keep the flow that we've built.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Together.
Through the transition.
Yeah, that transition needs to be smooth. And, I mean, any kind of water transition, any kind of fluid transmission, it's got to keep flowing to make it happen.
Yep. You know, there seamless can't, is what
yeah,
we're looking seamless,
for. Yeah, you're looking for the water to flow together. Yep. And that's... Really, and I
think it has.
Yeah, we're 4%, and I have been, and you know, who cares if I'm impressed or not? But I've seen enough of it to know, yeah, this is because with every new thing, you know, I'm not gonna lie. Last year, people are like, oh man, this new deal. What? Oh, I don't know if I'm gonna work for this new deal. I don't. What's this new deal? You know, anything that's new like that,
yeah.
People love to just worst case scenario.
Change you know, freaks people out.
Yeah, right. It really does, and it so.
But then they all gripe about, oh, well, you know, that NFR, they need to do this. They do something, and then you change something else.
Yeah, if you do something, they don't like it if you change it. But that's just people, so, you know, so, and that's, but.
And then they're the first ones to gripe about, well, it's, you know, we need to change this. Oh, my gosh, they're changing it?
Yeah.
You know.
But, I mean, like you guys, you talked about a minute ago, is that, you know, when they changed here, how much money was in.
Yeah.
Did that not. Make you know, when the Kissimmee deal and they did that whole thing, all this rodeo just became so much better.
Absolutely.
And it's going to just continue to be so much better, because I'm going to tell you now, as God is my witness, it doesn't matter come hell or high water, Boyd Plahamas is not going to let this rodeo slip even a little bit.
Totally agree.
He is not going to make that his legacy.
He's the right man for the job.
Right. Dude. I think he was. And they went through, you know, they obviously had a cattle call. See, you know.
Big
and,
names.
It's a process.
Yeah. And I, you know, I put my name in, but didn't hire me. So, no, I'm kidding.
I did too. I didn't.
There's a lot of heavy hitters.
I may have wrote the wrong phone number down. I didn't get
maybe
that call
you didn't get
either.
The call, right?
Yeah. Production.
No, but that's, it's
NFR.
The NFR production of all the things that I'm involved with. And, you know, like I said, we haven't talked about a lot. I shoot pyro.
Yep.
Some of the biggest places, NASCAR, right, you've done it.
IndyCar, yeah, I've shot a lot of pyro for stuff, and you know, Whiplash, I've taken them.
Poor you, I know we didn't get to talk about Whiplash.
Let's stop on that real quick.
Okay.
Let's talk about Whiplash.
We also have the monkey riding.
Where
dog.
Did? I don't even know how to ask this question. Where did the relationship start
with
you and Whiplash?
That?
Yeah,
you know, well, the like monkey. I said, I was clowning, and I had the chuck wagon races, and I was doing fine, and Mesquite sold, that whole entity sold. So all of a sudden I'm back on the road, you know, where I hadn't been before. But I built that up, and I, like I said, I brought the chuck wagons here. I had plenty to do. I was doing fine.
Yeah.
And Tommy Joe Lucia, who is...
I know Tommy.
Yeah, Tommy. Yeah. Tommy
Days of 47?
Yeah, he runs Days of 47. Yeah. Tommy Joe and I have been friends a long time. Now, his dad, Tommy, owned Whiplash. And one day Tommy Joe calls me. He said, you want to take over Whiplash for Dad? And I'm like, no, I don't need a stinking monkey. And he's like, no, I think you could do it. I said, yeah, I don't know what you think, but I'm good. I'm probably pretty good. He said, no. He said, look, Dad's getting older, and we all know in this business it isn't the performance, the awesome part. That's the best part. It's the getting to the rodeos and his dad was into his 70s and just the getting there and the you know, all that, the training and all that was just getting to be too much for him. And he said, just talk to Dad. See if Dad wants to sell. Well, I talked to Tommy a couple times, and he didn't want to sell. He just wanted me to get in the truck with him and help him. And that wasn't ever going to happen, because you can't put two stud horses in a trailer.
No.
They'll kick each other apart, right?
Yep.
So one time, and it had been 4 or 5 months later, Tommy Joe called me again. He said, hey, can you come get whipping the dogs? And I said, no. I said, I never made a deal with your dad. He said, Dad had a stroke last night. He said, if you'll just come get him. I know he knows my wife, and he said, I know Nicole, and you could take care of him. And he said, when dad gets better, we'll just pay you and you can get him back. Yeah. And his dad never got better. Mm. So I just ended up with, I mean, I paid for him, but I just ended up with that act, really, just as not as opposed to I was going to get kind of ended with it. And to be honest, for the first year, I didn't do a thing with him. I didn't know jack all about dogs, about border collies. I didn't know anything about monkeys. Yeah. And Tommy was gone. You know, he'd passed, and so there yikes. Was no...
Well, where did you put them, though?
When he first came, he was in an enclosure. They call it orangutan enclosure. It's a great big kind of deal. And I just took one of the guest rooms and put him in there, and then the dogs' kennels, you know, I've had dogs, but not border collies. And so I finally decided, you know, I'm not... He can't live in that thing. He's either going to get out or not.
Right.
So I just opened the door, and it took him 3 days to get out.
Oh, wow.
To come out of
there? Yeah, he would look out, but he wouldn't get out. That's awesome. Because I think he thought he was... Well, and his whole world was turned upside down. He only knew Tommy his whole life. Yeah. And Tommy was kind of an insular guy. He was an outstanding animal trainer, but he... You know, people weren't his favorite thing, you know, and that's not good or bad. He was just, that's just how he was. Yeah. He would way rather spend his time with his animals, you know, and so he didn't have, when like he had parties at his house, a lot of people came over. So Whip didn't have a lot of exposure to people, I don't think, and not much. And, that has completely changed because my house, you know, my house is kind of like a frat house. I mean, nice. There are always people plugged in or somewhere, somebody's at the house, you know, and anyway, so he now he just lives in the house like a cat. He's trained to a litter box. He
doesn't have much trouble with people knocking on the door though. With
he's fine. That makes a lot of sense because I mean I've been around Whiplash and you know being in the video control room and things like that. It's just fascinating because it's like a little person.
They are like a little person. And the thing about them too is you know you hear about people that lose control of their primate and they go nuts or whatever.
Humans do that too.
Yeah, but what that is, to be honest, you know, they are so human and they act so human, you start to treat them human. Mm-hmm. And the thing you have to remember, you always have to remember, is that they are an animal. Yep. So they need an alpha. It's a little bit like having your kids when they're young.
Yep.
Okay, Whip's a toddler that's never going to grow up. That's just, you know.
Yeah, good never. Point.
So the point is, so you always, every once in a while he tests me. He bites me when he's not allowed to bite me, or he'll bite me just to see if he can get away with it. Well, it ain't like all you gotta do is thump him on the head, knock it off. And then he acts like he broke his neck. He's like,
when I yell at Brett. Right,
yeah, he's such a drama queen, you know, or he'll go in the corner and sulk. But that's all it takes is just every once in a while reminding him that there's an alpha. Because all animals are like that.
Yeah.
There's always gotta be an alpha. And I think where people have problems with when you hear on the news where primates, it's that they forget that. They start to treat him. It's like a toddler. You treat a toddler like he's your best friend. Yeah. Oh, honey. Pretty soon you have control of it, you know.
Exactly.
He's pulling candy off the aisle that you don't need him to screaming, throwing a fit in Walmart, you know.
That is funny about when you said, because when we stay at his house and stuff, we'll camp, you know, there, because he's got this cool place. He's got the little small town village down there at the bottom. So everybody loves to come there. Matt Tarr, we always...
Oh, for War Whiplash?
Yeah, where they live.
Where I live.
Where he lives. He's got a great little ranch there in Stephenville. And we'll go there, and Bullet will, like, every once in a while, he senses there's something in that house. My dog is kind of famous, and he'll come over and he'll be like, and you can just see it in his eyes, Dad, there is something. There's a little man in that house right there, and he'll stare in the window at it. He'll be like, he would never hurt him, but he's like, and then the dogs, you'll turn the dogs out, and they'll all go play together. Right. And he's like,
man.
And I could just see it. My dog's out. He's like, there's something really creepy there. And then the sheep. Remember when the cat was getting the sheep? Matt Tarr, for days when we were staying there, because that's a good layover spot at Stephenville.
Oh,
Matt would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go lay on the roof because something was killing the.
I had some bobcat, my sheep, you know, and so.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up
like
he
got
it. Yeah, bobcat.
Oh, Matt Tarr.
Matt got
hit on the roof like a sniper and busted that cat.
Man. Well, you know, I can't remember, I was in the middle of nowhere, driving, middle of summer rodeoing, and my wife calls, and this is before she really knew, I knew Robbie from all the other places, but he hadn't ever come by the house. So she calls me, and she says, there's a pit bull in the barn. I said, a pit bull? Yeah, he's real skinny, he's real friendly. I said, does he have a Rockin' R freeze branded on his hip? She said, yeah. I said, that's Bullet, that's Robbie's dog. I said, look up, because our barn or shop, they're all kind of a quarter mile away from each other. You know, it's a big place. And so I said, just drive up the shop, see if there's a trailer up there. Well, yeah. But she says, but there's no pick up there. I said, he's getting to eat, something to eat. You can just catch him later. Well, that evening she calls me back and she says, he hadn't come back yet. She said, the pit bull's in the house now. I said, well, hang on, let me call him. So I call him and I said, hey, Rob, hey, how you doing? I said, where you at, buddy? He says, oh, I'm getting on a cruise ship. Kirsten, we're going on a cruise. I'm like, Bullet's here at the house. Oh, hell. Can you feed him once in a while?
I just dumped him.
Oh, man.
No, but
in case
was,
he can't get to the microwave.
Right, yeah, no. In case, yeah, no, it was fine. But that's
what's so fun about this relationship.
And, oh, it's amazing.
For all of us, yeah.
We have a good time in what we do. And he's got such a...
Well, I like this whole thing that I'm learning about Kenny, because the reason I brought up the production stuff with the whole meeting him, that's where I met Kenny.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I didn't know Kenny before that.
Mm-hmm.
And learning what I learned today, man, you've had a pretty good life.
Let me tell you, don't let him fool you. He's a badass in this business.
Absolutely.
And he's a savior to me. And I'll never, ever,
yeah,
ever forget what he did for me my first night at the NFR and warm blanketed me and showed me how not to make a fool out of myself. Because I've been known to do that.
Yeah.
But like you said, and it took him a couple years to say, hey, we put a tag with you the whole time.
Yeah,
and that's okay. Because you know why? Everybody here wants you to succeed. That in this part of it, you know, you got guys, the first thing they'll do is they want to see you fail because they can step up. Not in that group of NFR guys, because we're all at one goal, getting that sucker over it in 2 hours and getting those people back to gambling.
Back to the casino.
Yes, because it's a small part.
Absolutely, but to make all this thing go, and I know the way Sean works, I mean, it just proves a testament who you are, Kenny, because he doesn't trust anybody. And he definitely trusts you, I know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing what I've seen, and I'm always the outsider looking in, which is fine by me. Yeah, man, this is amazing. I learned all this stuff about you.
That's not so much stuff, man. I mean, like I said, there, the monkey deal's turned into a whole other thing by itself, and you know, things just, I just decided a long time ago that there's so much in rodeo that I like. There's so much I like to do, and I'm not gonna, like, for instance, Whip is 27.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. He'll live to be 45 or 50. Okay. So he's like a 40-year-old man.
Some time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, he's fine. The vet same thing. Yeah. He has 15 or 20 years left to ride in him. I ain't got that left in me.
Yeah. You know? Totally. Yeah, yeah.
But he's a middle-aged guy now. Yeah. So he doesn't need to go to a rodeo every stinking weekend, which we could. I mean, we could go somewhere every week. But he doesn't need to. So pick some, shoot some pyro once in a while. Go do some production stuff once in a while. I stream sometimes for Pro Rodeo TV.
Yeah.
So fly to those deals and stream that, just all of it production minded, but just, I don't mind doing a bunch of different things, like I said,
right.
Here in the fan zone, there's a bunch of flame effects, as you pre-enter and then out. That's just my stuff. And it's just, just one, I'm here. There's one more thing I can do. And, make a nickel at, and that's, there's some of that there too.
It just makes sense though. I mean, we started this calling you the Swiss Army knife rodeo, but it definitely makes sense. And what I like is just hearing number one, stories going back to when you started to where you're at now and kind of just this whole lineage, and you already got your own stuff going on.
Right.
Pretty good.
Well,
dude,
I'm glad that we get to maybe get you out in the spotlight a bit.
See, guess
you're
what?
The behind the scenes guy I've ever seen.
One of my favorite things about, like I said, we worked really hard for what we have, my wife and I, but never had kids, which is fine, and to be honest, Matt Tarr, who's the alternate barrel man this year for the NFR, his wife and him asked my wife and I the other day to be godparents to their new daughter.
Nice.
Not nice. I am starting to question their abilities to be a parent, because my wife's a New York Italian, right? With her, my God, they ask us, this
that
is a thing.
Awesome.
Oh, honey.
Oh, my God. And she's, crying. And I'm like, what the crap? And then so I get Google and I look up godparent. I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus, no.
Don't put that on me, Ricky Bobby.
You don't know. I am.
You're the go-to.
No, I have never changed a diaper in my life. And outside of one pregnant girlfriend in college, nobody's ever puked on me. So I am not... I'm not, I'm supposed to grow them up in the way they should go. I haven't grown me up in the way I should go. I'm starting to doubt their ability as a parent.
It thrives you to stay alive.
Oh, my God.
If I was going to be their godparent, I know they would make it. Right, no matter what. It'd be like flying with Donnie Gay. You're going to make it.
Yeah, but my point there is that the place that we have and the friends that we have that come and come through there. Tomas Garcilaso, they live in my wife's real estate agent. She found him a place. They live a mile away.
Nice.
You know, Bobby Kerr, the act of the year this year. Yeah. He lives just up the road.
Wow.
Maddie and Keegan Thomas. You know, Maddie's the trick rider here at the NFR.
Don't say she lives right by you.
Yeah, they live right there. And the funny thing too is the other day, real quick, Whip loves Maddie's husband, Keegan. For some reason, he just loves him. You know, and they fight and they push each other and bark and jump at each other all the time.
Yep.
Well, the other day we were just before we came here. And they had come by, they were in Canada and come by and dropped their horses off at my house 4 or 5 days just to get them acclimated to the weather before they come out here because it was so cold up there. So they just came down early so the horse could, you know, her horses could get used to the weather. And so we're in there watching football and Keegan been fighting with Whip. And Whip goes off the other side of the room. And Keegan just lays down, he stretches out like that. The football game was on and his shirt runs up. And that little bit of hair between your belly button and the rest of you, Whip run over there, grabbed it, ripped it out of his stomach, and ran.
He's on top
of the couch with his handful of hair, screeching and yelling and jumping up and down. He's got him his scalp. And Keegan's screeching like a mashed cat.
Oh, man, pulled hair hurts.
That's what he said. Keegan's a bronc rider, and he's a world champion outrider in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
He's a tough dude.
Yeah, and he says, I have been drilled on my head off horses 100 times. It didn't hurt near as bad as that did. And Whip had it in his hand like a scalp, and he's showing everybody he can show that you're.
I'm thinking monkey punting.
Yeah,
I'm fixing to punt this.
I'm digging
quick.
Whiplash more, man.
Yeah, he's if you don't, if you're like Tomas Garcilaso,
yeah, no,
he makes him nervous. No, Whip makes Tomas nervous.
Hell, he makes me nervous.
And Whip knows it, so he just buggers him.
Oh, that is
he
awesome.
Just chases him around and buggers him, and Tomas, he's nice monkey, you know.
I got you.
And then. Kenny, yeah, he was.
Oh, man.
We appreciate all this, man.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm so glad you get to shine. The greatest day was when
fantastic.
Kenny. I was the first one to call him when he got the NFR. And I said, congratulations, because you've made everybody else.
I'm going to add this, though. Look, Kenny. Look, you sat here with Joe Beaver. Man, you just delivered all kinds of crazy stories. I mean, like, it just doesn't end when we're sitting in this Bloomer Trailer Studio.
Rolling insane.
NFR Extra. And, you know, just we get to talking and.
Right, yeah, you can just tell stories all day long. You know what?
Yeah.
First time I saw Donnie Gay walk on water, there's a bunch of those too. So
yeah, exactly.
He told us about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But thank you for coming on, Kenny.
No, thank you for having us.
I know you. I think maybe there's a meeting coming up or something.
Probably a production meeting. I have to be. Yeah.
You're gonna have to stop by the liquor store.
No, I did not miss one. Trust me.
Okay. You can't do that.
You know, knock on wood. 15 years, I have never missed a meeting. I've been late to one, and I won't be late to another one. I'm gonna tell you now.
You remember when the year that. I missed one meeting just because they needed some more whiskey down
right,
there. So
yeah.
They put me on a meeting list knowing that I couldn't make it. And then, but we got, remember when we fed Benny the dog treats. You remember when Buck says, Benny keeps coming here eating my food. I went and got some kibbles and bits, made a little relish tray for him. Benny's eating dog food. What a great interview. Yeah,
thank you so much. Appreciate
all
it. Thanks for having
right
me.
On,
you bet.
Kenny. Thank you, man. Hey, good luck the rest of the week.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Right. Thanks for listening to the NFR Extra Podcast. Make sure to give us a review and rating on wherever you listen to NFR Extra. For more information regarding the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, visit NFRExperience.com and follow Las Vegas NFR on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube.
Gotta make it out to Vegas, where the big boys roam, with the rovers and the racers and the bulls and the browns, and the ladies in the skin-tight wranglers and the cowboy.